This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
It's been a while since we've caught up with Andy Van Slyke, and he joins us because he has a book out called The Curse, Cubs Win, or Do They? And, of course, any baseball fan knows Andy Van Slyke for his fine 13-year career in the major leagues, starting out with the Cardinals and then 8 years with the Pirates and finishing up with Baltimore and Philadelphia. You know, as I look through this book, Andy, I thought to myself, is this an autopsy on the Cubs' history?
Well, it sort of is. I mean, it historically in the book, it's correct. I mean, I wanted to give the reader who maybe didn't know about the Cubs or maybe someone who's reading a sports book with not just a sports story in it, an opportunity to have a feel for why the premise of the book was called what it was, and in the book, the ultimate curse takes place, if you will, to the Cubs. But, you know, there is a good ending to it, and there is a good story to it, and there is, you know, maybe that at the end of the book that they'll figure out that maybe it wasn't a curse all along. Maybe this was an unfortunate circumstances that the Cubs really maybe didn't find themselves in enough to really overcome not winning the World Series in the last 102 years.
I might point out to those that aren't not knowing of the history of the Cubs, have not won a World Series since, what, 1908, haven't been to the World Series since 1945, and you played in the National League and had a chance to firsthand as a player take a look at what they called the curse of the Cubs. Give me a player's perspective on this team and the history of it.
Well, you know, you shake your head sometimes, but I tell you what, they've had talent to win. They had talent when I was playing against them in 84. They had talent in 89, and, you know, they've had talent, obviously, recently. But it's just been tough for them to get there. That's the issue. The issue is not that they haven't won in 102 years. The issue is they haven't gotten there enough to give them an opportunity to win. And, you know, obviously when you get there more often, your chances are going to increase in winning. So I think, for at least from my perspective as a player, I can understand how tough it is to play day games, night games, day games, day games, night games, you know, get on the road, change time zones. And it's just physically, I think, more of a challenge than anything else to be able to play baseball when your schedule is totally mixed up. I mean, we know what it's like to work 5 or 6 days in a row, and then you know, you try to sleep in one day, you can't because you know, you wake up at the same time every time. So I think that's really the challenge for anybody who has to play in Chicago.
What are some of the highlights of this book?
Well, I think someone who's never read a sports book would still enjoy the book. Number one, it's just a good story. It's I think one of the themes that I really wanted to express was the dark side of human nature, and then hopefully overcome that. And we all have our demons, and I think a lot of our demons are passed down from father to son, and that was really one of the main issues, is the son going to follow in the sins of his father? And he has to make a decision towards the end of the book whether he's going to be end up like his father or whether he's going to take the high road or the low road. He's got two paths to take, and the reader's going to have to find out which one he takes.
I was interested in why you made this a fictional work rather than something that was based, I mean, I know it's based on history, but why not some other take on it?
Well, you know, I just thought that, you know, it's been so long since an average baseball fan or someone who wanted to read a story maybe about baseball, that what it might look like if this so-called curse is a real thing, which I don't necessarily believe it is, but I wanted to create a story that was the ultimate curse and the ultimate hurdle that people had to overcome. You know, it's one thing for a ball to go between the legs and everybody being disappointed. It's another thing when you lose lives in the process, and that's what happens in the book. There are people who are at the beginning of the book who are not around at the end to see what happens.
In the case of the actual curse of the Cubs, how much of that do you think is a curse, and how much is just plain bad luck?
Well, you know, I think the true Cub fan will say it's a curse. I don't, like I said, I don't necessarily believe that, but I think it's just because they haven't been there enough. It's sort of like, you know, if you will, a golfer who's had the lead on Saturday a couple of times and doesn't know how to close it out on Sunday. I think that's really what it's come down to. I think if the Cubs get there more often, eventually they're going to overcome this whole thing.
Of course, there were a couple of incidences that most of us are aware of. One, the ball going through Leon Durham's legs in 84, and then the Steve Bartman incident in 2003. How did you deal with that in this book?
Well, I told the reader exactly what happened. The historical part of those facts are in the book. The historical part of the Wrigley Field selling the team is true, but why they had to sell it is not true. So, you know, there is an incident where the Wrigley family has to sell the team or lose lots of money. And so the reader's going to have to find out why they sell it. Now, that's not why the actual Wrigley family sold it truthfully, but I changed that story. So, again, there's the historical part as far as, you know, the Billy Goat and Leon Durham. And one of the things I think people don't realize is that Leon Durham's glove had Gatorade spilled on it. The inning before, he let the ball go between his legs, and Don Zimmer and someone else took the glove and blew hair dryers on it, and he made it too stiff. The Gatorade actually got too stiff, and he went to close his glove, and he couldn't close it. So just another part of the history of the curse of the Cubs.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, Andy, because one of the things that baseball lends itself to so wonderfully is storytelling. What other stories kind of make people smile or laugh in this book?
Well, I think people are going to enjoy the fact that that the good side of human nature comes out. I mean, I created a lot of dark side in the beginning and throughout the book, but I think ultimately, I think people are going to like what happens in the end of the book, and I think that's really important for me, that so much of the book is there's a dark side, but there's redemption. There's redemption for the city. There's redemption for individuals who have been mischaracterized. And I think in the end, everybody feels good about the characters because in the end, they get justified.
Andy, you know as well as I do that a lot of people don't tend to see athletes, professional athletes, in the terms of being authors. I mean, serious authors like you are. And I'm just wondering about the transition for you. When you retired after the 95 season, going into private life, how did you make that transition? What was the toughest part about it for you?
I think for any athlete, whether it's someone like me who had a fairly successful career, someone who maybe not had as successful a career as me or had superseded my career, it is getting used to being just a normal person. You know, going into the grocery store, you know, you get one or two looks from somebody or you might hear your name whispered, but overall, you know, when you're a professional athlete and you're playing in that town, it just is, I put on a pedestal. And what happens is you live in a bubble and you think that the world revolves around you. It's just part of, again, human nature. It was an adjustment for me mentally and spiritually to be just another guy. And unless you're an elite athlete, a Michael Jordan or something of that stature, you know, 99.9% of athletes, the adjustment has to come that you're just another guy, and that when you get pulled over, you know, 10 years after your career, the cop doesn't care that you're not playing anymore. He may give you a break when you're playing, but you're going to get that ticket 10 years later.
8 years with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and your teammate there was Barry Bonds, and you've been outspoken before about Bonds, but now that he is retired and you have a chance to kind of overlook the whole landscape of his career, what are your thoughts about what he did in baseball and the allegations about him?
Well, you know, I think, unfortunately, Barry was the poster child of everything went wrong during the steroid era. I mean, he was just one of many players who tried to make himself better, did make himself financially better. But it's sort of ironic that, you know, the two guys back in 98 who were going for that home run chase really elevated baseball in the consciousness of America. and it was steroids that did that. So there's an argument to say that steroids brought a lot of money into the game, and you know, there were a lot of players who were on both sides competing against each other who were trying to make themselves the best athletes that they could. And that's the one thing I think people have to forgive, or at least maybe not forgive, but understand that when athletes are confronted, if I have an opportunity to run faster, jump higher, throw faster, hit the ball further, they're going to find a way to do that. And sometimes when they bend or break the rules, they're going to go ahead and do that.
Andy Van Slyke is with us. We're also talking about his book, The Curse, Cubs Win or Do They? And we're talking about Barry Bonds as well. The thing that I find very interesting that most fans can't relate to, the media can't relate to as well, is that athletes are out there to perform to the best of their ability. And that driving force, and I mentioned this today when I was talking to somebody, that the greatest motivation for a professional athlete is the fear of failure. Can you tell people what I'm talking about when I say that?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting that, you know, I think deep down, you know, for an athlete, his existence, his security, his identity, just like you, just like a lot of people, and most people, is either, you know, their beauty, their smartness, their how much money they make, how many records they can break. You know, we always put ourselves in a false identity, and that's what the athlete does. He wants to continue to always be successful, because if he's successful in the world's eyes, therefore he is better. He's a better athlete. He gets more attention, and more, that's where that false security comes in. And the more you fail, obviously, the less you feel about yourself. So there's an inner human spirit that wants us to be accepted by people, to be loved by people. And because if you fail in that process, people aren't going to accept you as well. And I think that's what really drives athletes to be who type of people that are. They become very, very competitive because they want to beat the other guy, not just for the competition sake, but for the, you know, the adulation that comes along with it.
One of the things that I have said is that the athlete, pro athlete's life is like no other person's life, to the degree that if you have a bad day at the office, you don't go back into your office and get booed. You don't read about it usually in the paper the next day like right. The athlete has. And that's a dynamic, Andy, that you can't prepare for. There's nothing that can prepare you for that.
You're right. And not only that, you get to go home and watch it 20 times in a night, too. I mean, it's, you know, if something really bad happens, you know, you drop a fly ball, the base is loaded, not only is it going to be on SportsCenter, or it's going to be on every sports station, it might be on the main news. People are going to say, you're not going to believe what I just saw. So the athletes understand that they're not always going to be successful, and they're going to be the GOAT sometimes. And, again, that fear of being that, I think, what propels athletes to try to be the best they can. They don't want to be that GOAT.
We've got about 1 minute left. When you reflect back on your entire career and playing professional baseball, what is it that you're left with? What means the most to Andy Van Slyke?
You know, it's interesting. I just got done doing a 3-day book tour in Chicago, and I think the greatest compliment I had from, you know, guys from 35 to 45 to 55, I had more of the guys tell me, you know, more than, you know, home runs or anything. They said, I love the way you played the game. You played the game right. And that really meant to me more than anything else. More rings, more than tennis, more than batting average, more than stolen bases, that people recognize that I played the game right. And I always tried to do that.
In about 30 seconds, how are you happy with the way this book came out?
You know, I am. You know, for the first time, it's a good story. You know, I was limited to 100,000 words in the book, so it's not a long book. I probably, if I do it over again, would have fought for a longer plot, but that's okay. The book turned out, I thought, tremendously. It's a good story. Like I said, if nobody's ever read a sports book, this is a book I think you'll be surprised and will enjoy, because it's just not about sports. It's about human nature. It's about the dark side and the good side of it.
Andy, thank you very much. Let's not make it so long before you come back and visit with me again. I love talking baseball with you. Take care, Andy.
All right, anytime.
Okay, Andy Van Slyke with us. The name of his book is called The Curse. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline.